think there's a need for this room afterwards, so let's start. I don't think we have enough members to pass the bill quick, so we'll stay with the agenda then.
So move.
Okay. The first item on the agenda, we're going to hear from our friends as we talk about our transportation projects and needs in the state. And we're going to start with the local bridge and road replacement fund, and so we fully understand the importance to the state. So thank you. Who are you? Why are you here? And how can you help us?
My name is Jim Beam. I'm with the OEA, and I'm getting set up for the next meeting.
So I have no beautiful. All right. How do you feel about roads and bridges?
Very important.
All right. Where are you guys at on arsenic? That was popular. Okay. Yeah, any road and bridge guys at all? Apples? All right. Well, you got
to
have some of it then.
At the federal level, they were trying to bring arsenic levels down to a level lower than natural water.
Did I get the wrong room? Oh, hold it. Wait a minute. Now we've got somebody. All right. What meeting do you feel you might be preparing for?
Local roads and bridges, sir.
Beautiful. Thank God. I thought I was in the wrong room. I didn't know. All right. Tell us who you are and proceed.
Thank you very much. My name is Rick Jonas. I'm the Deputy State Aid Engineer for MnDOT. And our office administers the local road and bridge programs through the CASA and the MCES formula through Town Road, Town Bridge. We also have two other programs, and they are the Bridge Bonding Program and we have the Road Bonding Program. And I'm here today to talk about those bonding programs. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I would talk about the Bridge Bonding Program first.
Check with members on the other side of the aisle. Yeah, they're fine with that, too. Go ahead.
Okay. One of MnDOT's priorities is to maintain and preserve MnDOT's existing transportation systems and infrastructure. Bridges are critical links in the transportation system, and state financial assistance to local units of government is necessary because many structures are too costly to be replaced or rehabilitated with local funds alone. This bridge bonding program has been a very successful program, and a great deal of reliance has come to be on the program. It provides a stable work, necessary work on local bridges to replace them. There's engineering and construction work both that is necessary, and it is important that the workload be stable every year, that every year we chip away at this very large problem that we have. Since 1977, 6,500 local bridges have been replaced or rehabilitated, of which 5,438 utilized $302 million through the Local Bridge Replacement Program funds. This funding program was started first in 1976. At that time, Minnesota had nearly 5,000 deficient bridges. Currently, there are less than 2,000 local bridges classified as deficient in Minnesota. A remarkable success story, but still a very large problem. There are 14,500 local bridges, but the numbers I've just given you show that there's wonderful support from the legislature. This has been an ongoing effort. It's been consistently applied. There is a certain amount of reliance that has come to be placed on this program, and we are making a difference in keeping the roads and bridges safe in Minnesota. At the current time, how the program is being administered is local units of government send in resolutions as to those deficient bridges that they would be prepared to replace during the next 5 years if funding was available, and they use other sources of funding besides just bridge bonding too. There are 392 local bridge projects requesting funds to be used this year from various sources of money. Some 208 of those projects are projects that were scheduled to last year, but due to the bridge bonding bill not being available for them last year, have been deferred into 2005 requests. $100 million of bond funds would be needed to fund those projects.
I understand that. So you got 392 total on the list?
Yes.
Of that, 208 were from last year's list?
Yes.
Total of all 392 is $100 million?
$100 million. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
This $100 million of bond funds would leverage an additional $100 million in federal, state aid, and local funds to complete those works. The MnDOT is here to tell you that the governor's request for funding for this bridge bonding program at this time, fiscally constrained, is at $28 million. And the way we would propose to administer that $28 million, the Sauk Rapids Bridge project is a very large project moving through the pipeline, and it should be ready for letting in the next few months. That project requires $15.7 million in bridge bonding. So we are taking money right off the top for that project so that can be made available to do that very large $50 million or more project. They need 15.7 of bridge bonding. The next priority for our administration of the dollars would be this year's federal aid program, if there is a federal aid bill, and we trust that there will be, requires $5.9 million of local match on those projects. And historically, we have allowed the use of bridge bonding money for the matching of the federal funds for townships that have difficulty coming up with that match, and for counties and cities too, so that this can be in addition to their regular program. So that $5.9 million. Then to the rest of our waiting list, we have a total of almost $17 million of projects that the plans are approved, all the permits are in place, they're on our desk, ready for letting. With the $28 million level, we would do about one-third of those projects. There are 60 projects on that list.
Let me make sure I understand that. I'm a little slower than... Yes, $17 million?
There's $17 million worth of plans on our desk.
And
waiting.
We have $6.5 million left, if I'm...
And we have $6.5 million left, so we can do about one-third of what's on our desk right now at the governor's level of funding.
And those are projects that are already ready to go.
Yes, correct.
And one of the things that, at least anecdotally, I've heard is people say, you can't put any more money on that. They couldn't spend it anyway. I'm not saying you're advocating for it. Obviously, the governor, he's comfortable at that $28 million level. But I think it would be fair to say that it isn't, the $28 million isn't there because that's the level of need or how many projects you get going. Rather, it's just a level that would fit in the budget target.
It's a level that fits in with the budget according to the governor, and it is the level we used last year's testimony. But it is also correct, sir, that at this time there are nearly $40 million that are sitting on our desk awaiting funding, including the Sauk Rapids Bridge that could be delivered tomorrow.
Representative Stolberg.
Mr. Chairman, could the department share with us a priority of where they would take the 28th?
Do you have a list that has the priority? I mean, everybody kind of knows that Sauk Rapids one, or at least we all hear about it, and so that's kind of, gained a lot of attention. But normally, I don't remember hearing about individual bridges like that. Do you have a bridge list, or how does that work?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have a list. As the plans come in and are approved and put on our desk, it's first come, first serve is how we've done that. And so that list, the way we administer the money, first would be Sauk Rapids, assuming that project goes this year, which we are. And then the federal match, which is that 5.9 I'm talking about. So at the $28 million level, we will have $6.4 million left. So we have a list of $16.5 million of plans that are on the list. I do have that list, yes.
Could you share a copy of that list with the members of the committee? I think we would all gain from at least understanding where the need is.
Sure. I've actually got it here today if you'd like
Mr.
that.
Mr. Chair?
We'd like that.
Let me go through these numbers with you. You said that the $28 million will access how much federal money? 5.6?
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, the $28 million... out of the $28 million, the second priority is for $5.9 million to be given to local units of government to match federal funds that they anticipate receiving this year on bridge projects.
Is that a 50-50 match?
It can be 50-50. It can be up to 80-20. Sometimes the local match is only 20%. Often it is 50-50. It varies according to the ATP decisions.
And Mr. Chairman, the 22.1, is that then just for the one bridge at Sauk Center?
Sauk Rapids.
Sauk Rapids.
$15.7 million. That's correct.
You don't have a problem with that, do you?
Oh, I didn't say I didn't have a problem. I just want to know, Mr. Chair, and
now
Representative Osmond, or Opez, I want to know what the numbers are. So, the fact is, I might have a problem with it.
Yes, there is. Thank you.
So that leaves 6.4 then for spreading for others.
6.4.
Sorry. I taught fast, but that doesn't mean I'm accurate.
I was hoping Representative Kahn would be here.
15.7 is Stock Rapids. Rapids? Stock Rapids?
Stock Rapids, yes.
Okay. Santa Rapids, yeah.
Is that
the other end of the bridge lands in St. Cloud, but they call it the Stock Rapids.
Mr. Chairman, is that to be able to get across that river without going through downtown St. Cloud?
It would be an alternative way.
Oh, that's boring.
Okay. All right. Here now is the bond fund waiting list. So let's see here. Take us through this briefly. This has got...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
At the top of the list, it shows $39,915,289. As of today, this thing was printed this morning, that's how much bridge bonding money would be needed to take the projects that are ready to go in our office and put them out to letting and get them ready for construction this year. And that is the total of all the bridges that are listed down below, starting with the first bridge being in Winona, next bridge being in Rice, next one being in Clay County, and they're listed down the line there, and there's a general description of where these bridges are. Now this list changes. It's not too unusual for a bridge to be added because of maybe a structural deficiency that shows up immediately or maybe in some environmental reason a bridge slips. So this is a guide, but it's pretty good. And so we're looking at that $40 million, and there's 60 bridges on this list, or just a little bit over 60 bridges. So if we'd be working at $28 million and only applying $6.4 million to this list to work our way down, once we get past the federal match and the Stock Rapids Bridge, we would only do approximately the first 20 bridges on this list. It would take us about one-third of the way down the page, more or less. If we would receive $40 million in bonding, then this list would essentially be able to be completed this year. I did mention earlier that counties have sent in resolutions that say that even though they haven't got the plans to us yet, they're working on plans that would provide a complete total of $100 million worth of projects that they could deliver this year, in their opinion. We have 40 on our desk now.
Great, thank you. Members have questions about the list. Oh, Laura Broad does. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have a question in regards to there's bridges being done in my area, which thank you very much for the priority. I think that they definitely rose to that level in terms of the need. The question is, though, there's essentially three bridges in a row being replaced, and not, I shouldn't say replaced. Some are being replaced and some are being renovated. The concern from some of the local people is in terms of crossing back and forth from a county to county, from part of the city to another part of the city. If there's a delay on one of the bridges, does that bump the next bridge further down in the list, or do you just hold the funds until you can get to that next bridge? There's some concerns regarding access.
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The compliment for the success of the bridge program definitely belongs with the county engineers, who are working with their local townships and county boards and city councils to put together a bridge program, and they hold hearings selecting on a five-year basis what bridges should be selected in a given area. They notify us by resolution so we can do this advanced planning and communicate with you. And we do try to administer the program on a first-come, first-served basis, and that's the list that we work from. And they supply us available matching dollars that they would propose to use and express a need for bridge bonding. If a project slips for some reason, we do talk to the county engineer. Some cases the slip is going to be short-term, and we don't want to move it right to the bottom of the list. But we're having immense problems with the Sauk Rapids, for example. That bridge, if it's there, it's there. If it's not, we don't have another bridge of that size to substitute up, as opposed to all these other smaller bridges. They're a little bit interchangeable on our funding list. And so we work very closely with the county engineers. And so long as we have a stable stream of funding that we can rely on, we've been able to put together a very successful program. But the county engineer is the ultimate decision maker on some of those subtleties.
Thank you. Before we go on, we'll officially call the meeting to order, and we have before us the minutes from the February 1st meeting. After carefully reviewing them, does anyone wish to move them?
Sure.
Representative Mahoney wishes.
One correction.
Oh, with a correction. Thank you.
He was here.
I saw him. The minutes will be corrected. Representative Mahoney, will you move the minutes as corrected?
That's correct.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. With that, Representative Garofalo has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Number one, on the bond fund waiting list you gave us, there's a project about two-thirds of the way down for Dakota County. This is missing a project description. If I could just have... So it doesn't need to be now. Does someone let me know what that is? It's project number 1959929. It's
possible, Representative Garofalo. That's from Homeland Security, and we can't let you know that.
It's a possibility. Thank you, Mr.
Will you give that information for Representative Garofalo?
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Second question, more of a process question. You mentioned that you process these on a first-in, first-out basis. I assume that the projects that come to you, there's some sort of waiting process, or there's some sort of application process those go through. Can you just briefly describe for me how that works?
Mr. Chair, glad to. As I said, the county engineers works with their local units of government, townships, city councils, and county boards, and they determine what they would propose to be doing over the next 5 years, and they pass resolutions, and those are sent in so we can start to develop a financing package at the state level for how this can be done, these very large expensive projects. Meanwhile, our district state engineer will visit the county and visit the sites and make sure that the replacement of the structure is appropriate and that we haven't overlooked any opportunities to eliminate bridges with road crossings, for example, rerouting of roads, and that the structure is really in the state's interest to replace at this time, and signs off on that. So there's a field visitation. And then projects come into our office, and we, as the plans are developed, they go onto a stack, first come, first serve. But again, we keep very close contact with county engineers and district people from our state aid office. If a bridge is closed, for example, that's grounds to automatically move it to the top of the list, and any other local sensitivity, if there's a detour planned and replacing of a bridge should be changed from one year to the other to work better with traffic patterns, we work very closely to make those subtle adjustments. So that's why we appreciate that the bridge bonding bill does not earmark and allows us flexibility to work with local units that way.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Regarding the bridge bonding bill, I know in some of the transportation funding there's a complicated distribution formula that doesn't really allocate the proceeds the way a freshman might think they would. Does any such formula exist for this fund, or is it really just, I mean, how do they appropriate? You mentioned the county engineers work with local boards. Is there a minimum or maximum appropriation level that goes to certain MnDOT districts or any group?
Jonas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this money is set up for the program, and it's administered statewide on a first-come, first-served basis. And so there is no formula. It is a grant program. It's a competitive grant program. And it's matched with federal funds, and we do appreciate when there were a chance to leverage these dollars. Counties sometimes put state aid dollars into the projects or local county road dollars. Town boards put money in there. Town boards do have some town bridge money. It's limited in the case of individual townships, but all these sources are pooled together, and we manage it with them on a grant basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jonas, I'm just trying to understand. These bridges, if you could just run through again the proration of the federal and state funds, and then so I understand you right, they're all ready to go in the building next door. The plans are there, ready to send out for bids now, and you just need us to get a bonding bill passed to be able to put these projects to work this spring. And then if you could, or if someone could just talk a little bit about the impact of the steel prices in the future if we're not dealing with this sooner rather than later.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the
the list of projects that I handed out is in fact in our office across next door and ready to go, with the exception that the federal projects and the Sauk Rapids Bridge are still in development. But knowing that they're coming, and the importance of not wanting to jeopardize the loss of federal funds or the complicated funding package that's put together on that large Sauk Rapids Bridge, those monies are set aside even though the plans are not on our desk yet. But the rest of the itemized list, those plans are on our desk, and that money could be put out the door as soon as funds were made available. And we're made aware that there are even more in the pipeline that are ready to be delivered to our office. That is correct. As far as the inflationary costs of bridges, they've been somewhat stable for the last several years. We're just starting to compare last summer's construction cost in the area of bridges with the year previous, so 2004 versus 2003, and I think we're sensing about a 5 or 6% increase with experience last year in the local bridge replacements, which steel is definitely a part of the cost. A lot of these bridges are concrete, but there's definitely a steel component in those bridges, and don't know what to expect for this coming year, but steel prices do fluctuate. I know it has been high. I thought it was starting to come down a bit, but these bridges have been somewhat stable for several years now.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jonas, if we were to go the $40 million route, you've got six of that in the bank now, so it's 34 to meet the needs of this project. And how much of federal money would we capture by coming forward with $40 million of state money?
Mr. Jonas?
Mr. Chair, we have no money in the bank. This program has been broke for nearly a year now. That's been out of money, and that's why the plans have been accumulating in our office unfunded, and that's why people have stopped sending plans to us and just told us that when the program is resumed, they'll start sending plans into us. And it is that start and stop, I think, that is more than, when you mentioned steel costs, I think it's the starting and stopping of the program that causes contractors to gear up and then gear down that probably has a larger effect on the cost of these small local bridges than probably anything else with materials cost. It's a specialized industry and benefits from, we all benefit from a stable workload in that area. So there is no money in the bank, and there is federal money expected from, even though there's not a federal bill yet, we do expect some federal money, and ATPs have earmarked somewhere between, I don't know the exact number, some of the ATPs put 50-50 on the federal bridges, and some of the ATPs allow 80% federal funds, which is the maximum federal allowable, and a 20% match. But we are told from the ATPs that $7 million is needed to match this year's federal work, or 5.9. The number is 5.9 that I've been using. And so we could assume that somewhere between $10 and $15 million of federal money is coming in for the local federal program and needs to have match money this year, or else the federal dollars will have to be somehow redirected so they aren't lost.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there something about the nature of these projects that more likely puts them in Greater Minnesota? It looks like Minneapolis and Scott County, or maybe and Dakota, but their metro counties are not broadly represented in here anyway. Is there something about the nature of the funds?
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman. No, this is a competitive program, and as county engineers develop programs within their areas, first come, first serve is how they're administered. If anything, geographics may play a part in the bridges, or how aggressive a county has been in the past and their current need for money, or how aggressive they are being currently, given the situation that we are in, where in the light of no funding being available, being willing to go and do the engineering and right-of-way work to get the plans and get them on our desk and await for the funding and be in a position where that works for you as opposed to developing alternative funding sources, all these things would come into play for why the list comprises those counties that are currently on the list. But if we would look back over a longer-term history of each county's use of the funds, I think we would see that they're all benefiting. if we would take another look at the resolutions for the 5-year ahead, look ahead for what they would propose to be using the money, I do believe that one of the next witnesses that's going to talk about this has given you a map that shows a geographical distribution of the projects that need to be done over the next several years throughout the state, and those dots. That's probably more reflective to the fact, say, for example, in the southeast and perhaps a little bit in the northeast, there's more bridges near the larger rivers than there is in other parts of the state where you might see culverts handling drainage more commonly.
So, Mr. Chair, if Representative McNamara and I have a concern about the East Metro, we might get some better news in the next list.
Or do
Representative McNamara and I have to get our counties on?
It's in the previous list where you have the
news. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think there's a Wakuda or some darn bridge I remember hearing about over in that East Metro area. Gosh, I think that might have been 10 or maybe even 15 million. I don't recall exactly, but I think there's been some bridges built up here.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, we got one.
Mr. Chairman, we have participated as the legislature in those bridges. I know. The Avenue Bridge or the Wabasha Bridge. I think the state put in the area of $30 million into that bridge. So but it's also a major bridge across a major river, and we should have done it. But it was not a small culvert. It was I think $30 million for that one a few years ago.
Representative Garofalo. Oh,
Representative McNamara, you feel better.
Oh, feel yeah. Okay. Representative Garofalo, how do you feel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You use the acronym ACP. What was that? What's that stand for?
Mr. Chair, I use the acronym ATP, which is Area Transportation Partnership, and there are 8 of those throughout the state of Minnesota. The federal funds that have come into MnDOT for highway and bridge improvements on a yearly basis, and that's the big federal highway bill that's being debated in Washington, D.C. right now. Those funds then are distributed to the various MnDOT districts, and each of those has an ATP, which is a not only MnDOT people, but people from local unit of government, regional planning commissions, and special interest groups, bicycle communities. Some of the tribes are involved in some of these ATPs, and those groups take a broader look at the transportation and the best use of federal funds, and then they actually make the decisions for MnDOT or help MnDOT make the decisions on the use of federal funds.
Mr. Chairman, I assume that there's one ATP for each MnDOT district then?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'll be quiet now. Thank you.
Well, we're here to learn. Knowledge is good. Okay, moving on. Do you have anything else that you want? Is that it? Is that you done with your presentation?
That, Mr. Chair, that would be my overview on the bridge bonding program, and then I have the road bonding program here.
Do you want to go through that now, or do you want to let the other bridge guys come up and talk first? Let's hear about roads now.
I'll give you a brief overview. Those guys are, I think, are chomping at the bit to come down and fill in some of the details that
I can see
you've been talking about.
They perk up every now and then when you say something.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to talk about the road bonding program through the local road improvement program, which was created by the legislature in the 2002 session. It was a result of a study commissioned in 2001 where we were asked to work with local units of government, take a look at needs of local unit of government that the current highway user distribution formula wasn't providing adequate funds to meet some of the local transportation needs. And after that study was done, the fund was put into law in 2002. There are two accounts in that program, the Trunk Highway Corridor Projects account and the local road account of the routes of regional significance. The Trunk Highway Corridor Projects account is an account which is set up to help local units of government with their local costs associated with large trunk highway projects that require local cost participation. At this time, there is $20 million provided by the legislature in 2003 to help them with the local costs of the Bond Accelerator Program and other large trunk highway projects throughout the state. The other account is the local road account for routes of regional significance. There was some money put into that account in, I believe, 2002,
However, the amount was line item vetoed out, so we've never had money in this program to work with this. The governor is recommending $10 million for this program for funding assistance for construction or reconstruction or reconditioning of local roads with statewide or regional significance. I may say that regional significance as defined in the statute and in the study that led up to that would be projects that are local major routes on either city, county, or township systems, and two very current examples of types of projects which could be funded would be the 10-ton local system or hazard elimination projects are two areas that are receiving a lot of attention as in need of funds for this type of program.
Representative Grafflo?
No.
I'll just take my shade, sorry. I thought that was do you have a list? Do you have an idea what we've done or what we would do? Or you got projects over there ready to roll out, same thing as in the bridges?
Mr. Chair, no. We have... the program was created, as I said, in 2002, and without having money in the regional significance account, we haven't proceeded any further. If money was made available, the law requires us to confer with the Association of Minnesota Counties, the League of Cities, and the Association of Townships to develop our final spending criteria, and we would look at the statute definition of regional significance along with any direction provided from the legislature on how you would want the money best used. I think the hope here is that at the governor's level of funding $10 million, we would hope to pilot this program and gain some experience and show you the type of benefit that could be placed on local units of government beyond what their current level of affordability is. Local units of government anticipating some funding in this program have been working on developing a 10-ton local route system, and they have also been working very hard to develop examples of how they would spend this money through this program on safety projects to save lives in their communities. So I know in the AMC area they have lists of examples of projects, and they would be very anxious of working with our office doing a very similar process to the bridge replacement program to show the legislature that they could put the money to good use and be prepared to come back next year for more.
Great. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jonas, is there any sharing available from the federal government in this program?
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair. Local units of government do participate in federal funds. They receive state aid funds if they're a state aid community, and of course then they have their local funds. In the vision of this program, local effort would be one of the criteria we would use to make the selection of the grants, and so they'd be free to provide a package of funding using any of these sources of money with any applications they may make. But as I say, this is a new program. We have no experience yet to see how this might work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jonas, would these projects take place in the coming construction season if we were to pass a bill early in this session?
Mr. Jonas.
Mr. Chair, Representative, unlike the bridge program, where we actually have plans on the shelf that could roll out as soon as the legislation is passed and the Department of Finance advises us that the bonds are secure and we can go forward, because it is a reimbursement program with bonds. Plans are not on the shelf on this program. We would need some startup time, and in my imagination, I think that construction this year under any program that's funded this spring would be difficult. Time the bonds would be made available, time we'd get our startup going. I have to imagine that the bulk of any work that we would do would be in 2006 season. Not that there isn't projects that are shelf ready, but to get a new program up and running. That's why I personally think it's so important to get a pilot program going, to get that out of the way if only a smaller amount of money could be made available so that we could get that ironed out.
Thank you. Are there other questions, members? Seeing none, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think there's one or two people who are going to testify. First on the list is Carol Avro from the Association of Minnesota Counties, also known as the AMC. Representative Kelleher and I actually have been working on an acronym list. We're going to sell it to freshmen. I think we could clean up pretty good, because I know for my first 2 years, and I'm not even on Health and Human Services. I can't even follow all of them. Don't be afraid to ask those questions if there's something you don't know.
You could be in for a serious disappointment. They might have been smarter than our class.
That wouldn't take much. With you and I in there, buddy.
I don't want to make Kelleher mad at me.
And Gerlach, that's the old joke, right? We got rid of Gerlach, went to the Senate, and helped the IQ of both bodies?
That's correct.
Is that what happened? Okay. With that, slight deviation. Please state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Lovrow, and I'm the Transportation Policy Analyst for the Association of Counties. And as you heard Mr. Jonas testify to, we do have a considerable backlog in bridges that need to be addressed. Counties are responsible for over 7,000 bridges on our two local systems. And as you heard, the program assures you as legislators that when you authorize these funds, that these funds are going for projects that have been planned and are more or less ready to go, and we will be rehab soon. We did lose, as you heard testimony, the 2004 construction season, so the fund is actually out of money, and the 208 projects that were deferred need to be addressed. In the governor's proposal, the $28 million, the federal match, the Sauk Rapids Bridge leaves $6.4 million to address a $100 million problem. The bridges on the county system are either structurally or functionally deficient, and this backlog is growing, and the cost to bring them up to standards is escalating. You heard Representative McNamara talk about the cost of steel going up, the cost of wages, health care is driving these projects. And they provide access to markets for our ag products, manufacturing products, and a multitude of other services that link our economy together. It's also costly for haulers and shippers when they have to navigate around road systems where bridges have been posted because they can't accommodate the heavier loads, not mentioning the growing number of agricultural pieces of equipment that are getting bigger and heavier. The other program you heard discussed was the Local Road Improvement Program. And we're requesting $50 million in general obligation bonding for this program. And while counties would much prefer a long-term permanent transportation funding solution to our county systems, the Local Road Improvement Program offers another tool to help assist counties and their local governments in funding some of their transportation needs at a time of declining highway budgets. With a reluctance to increase transportation user fees, this program has offered some hope to local governments that some of their long-awaited projects could be funded through another revenue stream. When the Local Road Improvement Program was established in 2001, it created two accounts. The Trunk Highway Corridor account that you heard testimony on has been a disappointment for two reasons. One, that local units of government can usually bond at a cheaper interest rate than this fund offers. And the second thing that was disappointing to find out is that we can't utilize the funds because the Attorney General has offered an opinion that you can't use general obligation bonding on trunk highway right-of-way. So we have $20 million sitting in a trunk highway corridor account that isn't getting spent, and we would urge the committee to try and find a way of moving that $20 million into one of either the Roads of Regional Significance account or another account that we are proposing. The other program that is in statute is the Roads of Regional Significance account. And one of the things we've been working on with the State Aid Office as you heard mentioned, is a development and a proposed map for a 10-ton system. And this local 10-ton system would, I handed you out these maps, and there's one map that shows you where the current 10-ton road systems are in the red. And the second map shows you a proposal of what a 10-ton system could be. And if you all look in your jurisdictions, you will find that there is a growing need to find some way of putting forward a system to address the interconnection to the interregional corridors. You see these fragmented systems, and yet we have haulers and shippers that come every year asking for seasonal weight limit exemptions from our postings because there isn't a system to accommodate them. And this is an attempt to address that issue. We would hope through providing revenues and through this regional road significance account that we could put together a 10-ton system, and those shippers and haulers then would use that and take the burden off our 7-ton and our 5-ton roads. And this program...
Question or comment? Representative Hausman.
Just clarify, the interregional and high-priority regional corridors, does that mean those are existing 10-tons?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes, on the map you see in red, those are county state aid 10-ton roads. And not necessarily do they connect to the state interregional corridor system or even trunk highways in some cases.
And what I'm asking is, Mr. Chair, not from this map, but from this map?
The proposed map?
Right, where it says interregional and high priority. They exist or they don't exist?
Ms. Lavro.
Mr. Chair, if Representative Hausman, the interregional corridor do exist, and that's what MnDOT's been focusing a lot of their funding on. And we would hope to connect our 10-ton county state aid system to the interregional corridors or main trunk highway system.
Thank you. Please proceed. That Representative Mahoney.
This 10-ton system that we're posing.
Please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just out of curiosity, by the time we leave town, are there any roads that have a restriction on them?
Are there?
Avril.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I'm not sure I understand what question you're asking.
Well, we do so many.
Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do so many. We lift the restrictions by the end of session on so many roads. I'm just wondering if there's any restrictions at the end of session.
Ms. Lavro, you're not required to comment, but you may.
No, that's all right.
Depends on who your county engineer is. We got a tough county engineer in Freeborn County. She cracks the whip. Oh, wait a minute. She's here, too. I better hold back on those comments. Whip off later. We digress again. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to let you know, out of the total of this proposed map, it comprises about a third of the county state aid highway system. So we're not proposing to make the whole county state aid highway system 10 ton. But we are proposing this map. And what we're anticipating the cost to be, the cost to build the proposed map would come to around $8 billion. And we're anticipating the current county state aid highway fund could provide revenue for 50% of the system, and then we would ask local road bonding for 50%, so if we could start at roughly $40 million a year. We think in roughly 10 years we could complete a 10-ton system as proposed.
Representative Kelleher seeks recognition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I was going to ask Ms. Loverell about the cost. Maybe she would like to comment on what some other funding for transportation might do here in terms of speeding up this process. If there were new funds available that could go for debt service
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher. At the current time, county state aid engineers do a 50-year road analysis, and we are $195 million short in just preserving our current system. So the AMC has a funding package that we are going to be bringing forward to this committee eventually that does include a 10-cent gas tax increase to start addressing some of these concerns. And yes, if we were to get a significant transportation long-term funding package, we could accelerate and be able to provide through the county state aid highway funds more revenues to accelerate this program.
Thank you. Please proceed.
The other thing I'd like to talk about briefly is the roads, a rural road safety program. One of the things, the two accounts that are established in statute are the Trunk Highway Corridor account and then the Roads of Regional Significance account. But the other issue that has developed on our county state aid highway system is an increase in fatalities and injuries. And so what we're suggesting or proposing and requesting is $50 million to fund a rural road safety program and create that account under this local road improvement program. And I have with me today Rick West from Otter Tail County. He is the current president of the County Engineers Association, and he's going to talk about the projects that are currently ready to go and could be built with some money for rural road safety.
Great, thank you. And welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and tell us about rural road safety and why. I noticed in the testimony from Ms. Labro, she said it is increasing and sounds like it's getting worse. And what's causing that? But please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Rick West. I am the county engineer for Otter Tail County, and am serving as the president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, who I'm representing today. The as Ms. Lebrow stated, the local road improvement program does include projects that would be considered hazard elimination. We commonly call them safety projects. I want to background the committee a little bit on the safety activities in Minnesota. Over the last 2 or 3 years, the County Engineers Association has prepared what we're calling the Minnesota Rural Road Safety Program. It was developed in 2003, and I want to clarify the word rural in that program's title. When we say rural, we're referring to narrow two-lane highways, narrow shoulders, steep in slopes on the roadways. And so what the definition of this type of roadway could be a very rural county. It also could be a very urban county. Also at the state level, there is a Towards Zero Death program, TZD program, that has been active for several years, and to much of our encouragement as an association, the engineering side or highway side was actively pursued to attend the last conference, and the title was Integrating Minnesota Public Safety Agenda, and I think that was a very large step in bringing us all to the plate as far as highway safety. MnDOT is currently working developing a comprehensive highway safety program. So there's much that has been done in safety in the last 2 or 3 years. What we are here today to discuss, we did hand out a project list, and that is a bright green sheet of several pages in length. Those are projects that the counties have submitted that are safety related in nature. And they represent the vast majority of the counties. There's probably several to come in yet. That funding list, we're looking at a total of about $50 million worth of projects on that list. We're saying today that those are projects that we could deliver in the next 2 years, provided there was funding available to us to do that. And There's some details yet to be worked out, I'm sure, as far as prioritizing projects. We basically went to each county and said, what is your project of concern, reference safety, and that county engineer then submitted that project to compile the list. So, Mr. Chair, we are, as Ms. Larbel said, we are requesting that the committee consider funding in the area of $50 million for this the safety side of the local road improvement program. The projects are there. I think every one of these projects are projects probably that have been around for quite some time on an individual's county's list as projects they would like to get to. We would view this funding as a mechanism, maybe seed money is the right word to use, to actually move these projects from being on a plan to actually being built and improving the highway safety.
Mr. West, perhaps you covered it, and if you did, I apologize, but I was just piqued by the increasing part of Ms. Lavo's testimony. What are the dangers? I mean, you know, I read the projects and sort of understand what's happening out there. Just kind of give us the flavor of what's going on and why this is more of a, as I understand it, more of a impact in certain parts of the state than others.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the safety committee's feeling, and I should say feeling, but what we think is going on out there is, number one, traffic is increasing, whether you're in a urban setting or a rural setting. Many of the roadways that these projects are on are, as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, they're narrow two-lane highways, very narrow shoulders. And with the increase in traffic that is occurring in many areas of the state, the accident rate and accident numbers are going up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Lavro, please.
Thank you. If I could, one of the other reasons we're so concerned about it, for the county state aid highways, that's with the largest accidents, fatalities, and injuries occur, and that's why counties are so interested in this program. If you look at the Minnesota Crash Facts book and the statistics, the majority of those accidents and injuries are occurring on our roadways.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier you mentioned the Trunk Highway Corridors Project account. The legislature put $20 million into that 2 years ago. And then the Attorney General said that you can't use general obligation bonds to work in the trunk highway system. Are you aware of anything we're doing to free up those funds or to get moving on that or change the Attorney General's mind?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, MnDOT has done everything possible to utilize those funds, and there just doesn't seem to be an answer to use it out of that account. So I don't know what can be done other than transferring or finding a way of getting the money out of the account and putting it in to the roads of regional significance or the rural road safety account where there aren't those restrictions.
Paula.
Representative Garofalo.
Regarding the, I'm going to make up my own acronym here because I just wrote it out, the LARARS for the LARAs. I don't know.
It's a broad category.
Ah!
Where's the county engineer when you need one?
He's up there.
Again, a similar question that I asked before. I know you and I have had extensive discussions regarding the CASA formula. What are the LARAs? Are there any... It's a good acronym. It works. are there any minimum, you know, distribution requirements or allocations in MnDOT district? Because I can just see if it's first in, first out on that program, you know, someone's going to get smart and submit everything first. Is there anywhere of any distribution minimums, maximums?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, no. It would be administered much like the local bridge program. MnDOT is required to confer with the local units of government, and there is an advisory committee that's established consisting of elected officials and engineers, both from the counties and cities, that would administer the criteria and establish the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Perhaps you might want to think about a pilot project of paving certain township roads in certain counties of the state, but we can talk about that later.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, do you have anything else or any other questions? Thank you very much. It looks like next on our list is our friend Mr. Keith Carlson from the Metropolitan Inter-County Association, the MICA counties, the counties with the money, the big dogs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Real guys.
Appreciate the introduction. We're another one of those associations with acronyms, in our case MICA, but despite the name of Metropolitan, our organization consists of five collar counties here in the Twin City metropolitan area and seven counties in greater Minnesota. I'd like to leave three things with the committee before I leave today. First, unless this legislature passes a comprehensive transportation funding package, this may well be the only way the local bridge bonding program and the local road improvement program that you can put dollars out there for local governments to increase transportation funding. Unfortunately, although the legislature addressed on a short-term basis the transportation funding shortfall for the state trunk highway system in both 2003 and 2001 with general fund appropriations, counties and cities saw very little of that money, nothing in 2003, and really minimal dollars in 2001. So we strongly encourage you to go forward with this, just for the mere fact that this will provide at least some local dollars in the short term. Secondly, if your concern in passing the bonding package is to inject dollars out into the local economy, the local bridge bonding program is certainly the way to go. Has already been identified for you by the previous speakers. There are 40 projects that are ready to go today as soon as the authorization, as soon as the dollars are put forward, which may not be the case for several other projects that you may be considering as part of your bonding package. Finally, I want to reassure the metropolitan members whose counties I generally represent that there is no formula issue here. There is a formula issue with regards to the county state aid highway formula, but that is not true of the bridge bonding program. I think I can say with certainty that all 87 counties support this program. I'll just try not to be redundant on the rest of my comments. There.
Was that funding formula problem, was that with the Metropolitan aid to counties of over, or to cities over 5,000? Is that the problem one?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's two issues. I think you're referring to the MSA program, the city aid portion, the 9% of each dollar of gas tax and registration fees that are made available to cities under the state's constitution. I'm referring to the 29 cents that are distributed among all 87 counties per a statutory formula that dates back to the 1950s. Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to speak to the city formula. I am going to speak to the county formula. And the larger counties, including outstate counties such as Olmsted County, Stearns County, Rice County, have significant problems with the current statutory formula.
Thank you.
Going on then with regards to bridges, just to make sure that the committee understands, local governments, counties, cities, townships are responsible for nearly 15,000 bridges in the state of Minnesota, over 75% of the total number of bridges out there. The legislature has long provided special funding for this program, and this program has been successful because there's criteria in place in identifying which bridges need repair and replacement, and that criteria is followed in identifying those projects that are funded under. The money that's authorized as I said, can get spent immediately. In 2004, the House, in its bonding bill, did approve $45 million for this program, and the Senate bill that failed to clear the entire Senate but has it reached the floor contained $40 million. Unfortunately, as you know, no bill was ultimately enacted. The $28 million recommended by the governor is, in our point of view, inadequate. As you've already heard, over half of that would be eaten up by simply one project, the Sauk Rapids Bridge Project, leaving very little for the remaining need that's out there. As you've also heard, there's probably over $100 million of projects that we could identify if we thought that funding would be immediately forthcoming. At the very least, that we ask that you consider providing a funding level consistent with what was provided or authorized by this committee last year at the $45 million level. We'd also like to encourage you to go forward with funding the local road improvement program. It's necessary to address deteriorating rural highways and increasing traffic congestions on growing regional and metropolitan area roads. I'd remind you that in 2003, again, the legislature provided substantial funding for state trunk highway projects in the short term. Unfortunately, the local governments, the counties, to a lesser extent the cities, are incurring substantial costs for their roads that intersect with those projects, but no dollars, again, were provided whatsoever for those costs. For example, down in Rochester, the current projects on Highways 52 and 63, the county cost relating to those trunk highway projects is $17 million. The counties are very anxious to get some assistance in meeting those additional costs that are being incurred as a result of the acceleration of those projects. I guess I would conclude with pointing out that 3 years ago, you authorized $20 million for the local road improvement program. Unfortunately, as was already mentioned, it was vetoed by Governor Ventura. Last year, the House approved in its bill $15 million. We would certainly be hopeful that you could fund this program at least the $20 million level that was authorized three years ago. With that, I'll conclude and be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Carlson? Representative Hausman speaks recognition.
Well, actually, not for Mr. Carlson, but just to revisit something that Ms. Lovrow indicated earlier, and Ms. Dyson and I have been visiting a bit about, and that was that Attorney General opinion that $20 million could not be used, and we consulted with finance, and some people were hearing that for the first time. We presumably should have known that. And I don't know if MnDOT... Mr.
Jonas, can you speak up? Is he still here? There he is.
Whether do we have, is that new information? Was that accurate? What we heard?
Thank you. Mr. Jonas, are you using the dollars for something? You got another program out there? What's happening?
And specifically, there was a letter apparently from the Attorney General that was news to some staff in the room.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, to speak to this loan availability in the Trunk Highway Corridors account of the Local Road Improvement Program. That money, which was appropriated in 2003, we have not spent any of that money yet, and there are several reasons for that. It has been very difficult to administer, and it is being administered through our office. The primary reason that nothing has been spent out of there is that our initial criteria for eligibility on that is we limited the applicants to only those who had cost share agreements with MnDOT associated with the bond accelerated program. And to date, there has only been a few of those projects which have moved forward to letting, and the one that is currently moving into the letting stage is along 212, and the city of Chanhassen is the community that has a local cost share on that project of nearly $6 million for the 212 and the 101 work, and is in need of some sort of what they're calling gap funding. They can get some dollars in the future, but this project is coming on them faster than they can get their financing together, and they're looking to MnDOT for a loan. So So this is our first real experience on that. Other projects such as 52 had moved along faster than what this program had been put together for. So, and other projects are coming up for letting. So I have heard, for example, that Orno is interested in some of this money in the future. So that's the primary reason the money hasn't been spent yet. We are in active negotiation, and in fact, I think next Monday night the city of Chanhassen is going to be voting on whether or not to accept a loan or not. Now, regarding the other difficulties that we've had, the legislature in the special session when this money was made available set aside general fund bonds for the source of money for this program, as opposed to the time when money was made available in earlier session, it was surplus dollars, cash, that was made available. The Attorney General's opinion is really nothing new for people who work with bonds on a frequent basis, and trunk highway bonds and state aid bonds and whatnot, but in the most simplistic explanation, and it does get very complicated, since there is a dedicated source of funding for trunk highway work, when bonding is necessary for that, and MnDOT is running into that, then the bonding source should be trunk highway bonds repaid for through trunk highway sources. And if a county road is to be built, then the source of bonding, like on the local bridge program, would be general fund bonds. So when we have an intersection of county roads and trunk highways, and MnDOT is doing a project and there's some local cost share, for example, a traffic light that needs to be installed, but somehow it's determined that the local should pay one-fourth of the cost of the traffic light. The traffic light is necessary. The bond councils are saying that you can't use general fund bonds on that traffic light because it's on MnDOT right-of-way and it's a necessary trunk highway appurtenance, and general fund bonds are not appropriate. As we would look at a cost share for a local intersecting road some distance off the trunk highway right-of-way, then there will be an area where it becomes more appropriate to use general fund as a source of bonding for the locals. So there's a blur line as that local road starts to encroach upon the trunk highway right-of-way and intersect. And in the case of drainage issues, whether stormwater ponds where both right-of-ways are sharing, it becomes complicated to determine whether or not MnDOT would have built that pond. And bond council wants to know whether they would have built that pond with or without the local project. And so their determination on what they're willing to allow bonds for is different than what the cost participation policy or what our own intuition for the intent of the program would be. A third difficulty that we're having is the very fact that it's bond. Not all highway projects are bond eligible. Some of the simple things that we were looking with doing under some other bond programs that have been available in past years, paint taping to provide a more durable paint surface that doesn't wear out, but does have a lifetime of less than 20 years and is a maintenance item under many jurisdictions' definition. Bonds need to be made for capital improvements that improve the actual net asset value of property and shows up on inventory in that fashion. And so when we look at a negotiated project between a local and a MnDOT and start looking at the detailed list of items, park benches along a trail and whatnot, some of these items they're going to say are not bond eligible. And so we've had to scrutinize the list and determine bond eligibility, and then if it's bond eligible, is a trunk highway bond or general obligation bond. And then as one final kick in the pants for this whole thing, the local unit, the government has to look at its own bonding authority. And this falls within that, and the repayment of it may fall within the mill levy limitations. And so we've got that complexity as the local unit of government determines whether or not they can even accept this. It's been very difficult.
Well, it really clears it up for me. Can you spend the money or not?
if I could just, one clarifying question, and so to your second issue, that your comment about general fund dollars. So the point would be the legislature didn't have it within its authority to authorize spending general fund dollars in that way. Is that correct? And if that's the case, what are the implications for any of the issues coming up this year? Is there something we need to learn from that for this year.
Mr. Jonas, is something we should learn, and should we put that in another fund, or what's going on there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, it would certainly be much simpler if the source of funding for a program like this, with its intent to simplify a program and help MnDOT deliver its program with a local cost share and help a local unit of government come up with a quick, easy source of funding that gets them in the ballgame that they can later repay once they get their other sources going. Cash would be much preferable over bonds. Some of the units are even saying they can bond for less than the state can, and so there's all these complexities with this source here. If the intention of this fund is for simple money, cash would be the answer. In the original study that was done for the legislature about how this fund should be used, most attention was put on the fact, and the fund can be used for grants or loans, but the legislature earmarked this for loans. The real hope of the program was that the legislature would see fit to fund for grants and fund for extraordinary costs. For example, the Wakota Bridge and some of the projects, some of the local communities there that had very large local costs, or the Highway 100 project that put some very large utility costs along its corridor. That was the origin of this project, and those communities, I think, were coming in asking for earmarked funding for very large costs that that they couldn't afford even in 1 or 2 years. And so grants to pick up costs, and there was an ability to pay factor that was defined. And once you reached above that level, then the program saw fit that grants should be made available to help programs like that go forward when a local community is hit with a large cost. And this loan program right now, I think the communities are saying that they don't need loans right now. They can borrow money if that they need to, but they need a way to deliver projects. They're loaned out.
No, but I think maybe this is just an issue that, you know, for both transportation finance and for this committee to, as we
try to sort out and resolve them.
Uh-huh.
We were thinking about asking you to repeat your answer.
No.
Thank you very much for that.
Sure. Anytime. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I don't see any other questions. We appreciate your input and keeping us on track. Okay. That probably concludes the road and bridge portion of today's hearing, unless someone wants to jump up okay? No? Good. Moving on, so we can get done on time, we have a brief presentation by the PCA, the Pollution Control Agency, on the closed landfill bonding procedure. And the reason, again, remember, that we did this is there are some new members of the committee, new members, you know, some of these things get to be routine. Sometimes I think it's important to stop and say, what the heck do we do that for again? And so when we think of why do we do stuff, we thought of you, so. Please identify yourself with tape and proceed.
My name is Kathy Sather, and I'm the budget manager for the Pollution Control Agency. And what I'm going to be covering today is just a quick overview of the closed landfill program and its statutory sources of funding, which includes bonding.
Is that Schaefer or Safer?
Sather. S-A-T-H-E-R.
Sather.
Sather.
That's what I thought.
Also, I'm going to cover the level of work we propose to do with the current request and then our future needs. I also have Doug Day with me if there are specific program questions so that he can answer those questions. The governor is currently proposing $14 million for the closed landfill program, which was the same amount that was proposed for in the 2004 legislative session. And that is also the amount that the House was proposing at its last request before the end of last legislative session. The closed landfill program is unique in the nation. It was created in 1994 as a result of the legislature's concern that in the past landfills did not set aside money to adequately close and protect the public health and environment from degradation. The state assumed the responsibilities for these landfills so that Minnesota businesses and municipalities wouldn't be sued under the Superfund program for the remedial actions that need to be implemented. To be eligible, the landfills had to have stopped taking in municipal solid waste by 2000. There are currently 108 landfills in the program that represent over $185 million of outstanding state funding obligations. Funding for the closed landfill program was set by statute and includes three funding sources. Half of the solid waste tax, solid waste management tax, any financial assurance and insurance recovery assets that may be available, and then the bonding. When the program was established in 1994, the legislature provided for $90 million of bonding to incur in phases through 2004, which would allow us to issue the bonds over time versus all at one time. What happened 6 years later in 2000 legislative session is another law was passed that required the Commissioner of Finance to cancel unspent or otherwise unobligated bond proceeds in the odd years. What happened then is this had an impact to this program because it canceled the schedule that was previously laid out for the $90 million and the 1994 Landfill Cleanup Act and resulted in canceling $56 million of unused bond capacity. Since in 2001 and 2002, we did go back and request and did receive approval for an additional $30.5 million in bonding that we anticipate will be spent by the end of this fiscal year. The governor's recommendation of $14 million will cover the design and construction at three sites. There is also a remaining need of $17.2 million for an additional nine sites that we are planning to come forward through with a proposal in fiscal year 2006, and that will be our final request for bonding for the closed landfill program. A fact sheet was provided in your packet that includes a map that lists the sites that would be funded. The three sites that would be funded with the $14 million includes WLSSD, East Bethel, and Winona. And then the remaining nine sites are also listed on the map. That is where I'll conclude unless there's other questions.
Any questions for me? Any questions for Ms. Slater? Go ahead, Representative Peterson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is probably more specific, and it's in regard to a specific landfill, i.e. 35W Freeway Landfill between Bloomington and Burnsville.
I'll let Mr. Day answer that for you.
And as you're well aware of the background, and I have tracked this background for 20-some years and know more than I need to, but again, the issue is the landowner contends they have met the requirements for closure, and now they wish to develop that property commercially. And we're working with the city of Burnsville to do that until Bloomington had a fit and fell in it and diminished part of that. Again, the issue and the concern is that the state is going to take over the obligation of, quote, closing it, and in the process take ownership, and therefore usurping the owners of the ability to develop a piece of property that's worth substantial sums. So when I saw the closed landfill, my antennas went up, and I ask of you to indulge my question about that specific site. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. It looks like we've got some help. If you could identify yourself for the record, sir.
Yes. For the record, my name is Doug Day. I am a supervisor in the closed landfill program at the Pollution Control Agency. With regard to the question that was raised about the freeway landfill, that landfill is a qualified facility for the closed landfill program. It has not had a binding agreement signed for the program that's in effect. It's one of the four sites that have not had binding agreement signed. It's true that that site was closed under the previous standards for closure, under the old standards for closure. It would not meet the current standards for closure. It was closed back in the late 1980s. Early 1990s, and it doesn't meet current closure standards. As far as ownership of that landfill, our program does not require the landfill owner to turn that land over to us. That landfill owner can keep that property. It's an option. If they want to turn it over to us, they can. The state of Minnesota, the Pollution Control Agency, we own over 20 landfills out of the program, but that's out of 108 that are qualified right now. So that hopefully answers a couple of your questions about that. Yes, the landfill owner has raised the question about development of that property and adjacent property in the past. We have been in negotiations on and off that owner for 10 years, and it's we've kind of gone in circles. But we are by no means are we trying to stop the opportunity for responsible development, but at the same time, we are against development that would exacerbate problems at that site that could create problems either in the Minnesota River or at the in adjacent areas, the Burnsville well field. There are a lot of issues surrounding that site.
I'm not sure what question I would ask to follow up, but we'll stay tuned.
Okay.
We'll probably be 10 more years we'll be talking about it.
We hope not.
Thank you, Mr. Day.
Yes.
Ms. Hather, do you have additional testimony?
That's it.
Any other questions? Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hather, I just want to make sure I have this clear then about how this works. So in 1994, the legislature authorized $90 million. And I remember back then I wasn't serving them, but there were a couple members from this committee who were serving. There was a lot of things about the landfills and some lawsuits from businesses, and this was kind of the agreed-upon thing that was going to happen as far as the landfills. So things were going just fine, and there was this cancellation of $56 million later on. So it's kind of like there's this $90 million that was intended to be used for that, and then it almost sounds like an error or something that happened with this statute in 2001. And so now we're trying to kind of correct that error to some extent. Maybe just a real quick clarification on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. Basically, you're correct as the fact that $90 million was the intended amount to be issued and phased in over time as far as increments for the needs for the program. And while the law that passed in 2000 did have an unintended consequence on the program, so which means consequently we've had to come back during the capital budget bonding request to try to re-request those funds so we can clean up those sites.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else? Good, we're going to move on. We've got OEA here, I think. Mr. Banky's probably going to move his way down here. And we're going to give you about 6.5 minutes, Mr. Banky. No, actually we have till 4:15, correct? Oh, but we want to get out of here a little bit early, so you know the program. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Benke. I'm the Strategic Directions Manager at the Office of Environmental Assistance. And while Mr. Beam here hooks us up electronically, I'll get started with a little overview of our capital assistance program request. Just for background, the Office of Environmental Assistance provides mostly financial and technical assistance to a variety of entities, including local units of government. Our Solid Waste Management Capital Assistance Program is designed to provide incentives to local units of government to provide integrated waste management systems in counties, cities, or regions. This request is for $4 million for this program, which would be set through a grant process for competitive grants. Back in September of 2003, we asked the different counties and potential applicants out there what were the needs, and they responded with 4 applications at that time. Those 4 projects were reviewed for eligibility, and the requests that we had received were for a little over $22 million in grant requests. We plan to have these provided out in grants in early 2005, as soon as we can get the program moving. As I mentioned, the purpose is really to assist local units of government in providing the infrastructure which can recover materials and energy from waste. I've got one of the greatest jobs in the world. I get to talk trash all the time. but what we're trying to do is take that trash and convert it into usable resources. This has been a catalyst for regional cooperation. Many of the projects that we have across the state are carried out in the form of local units of government combining together through joint powers and other agreements to work together. It also achieves the environmental goals of the state to create a waste management system that utilizes the material in the waste as a resource. You just want to pull up here. The purpose also has another portion that really I think we've concentrated over the last few years on emphasizing, and that is that it expands the local economies and jobs. utilizing materials for energy or as recyclable materials recovered. We've created secondary materials manufacturing in the state as well as energy for other applications. We also incorporate, as I mentioned, the waste hierarchy, the fact that we've created regional cooperation, but we base all of this off of local county planning that's done, and we work with the local units of government to take a look at the needs. As I mentioned, this is a competitive program that takes a look at not only the eligibility of the applicant, but also at the technical merits and the financial feasibility of the projects that we look at. We also take a look at the readiness of the projects in terms of a timetable for permitting and developing so that we aren't hanging out with unexpended resources because we haven't been able to get a permit off the ground or a project going. The summary of the proposed projects that I've got here, I wanted to at least put in front of you today some of the information that we've been able to translate from the projects. They not only manage the waste for us, but they also are able to create economic advantages. The proposed CAP projects that we have now in terms of requests include a request from Olmsted County for $4 million, a request from the City of Red Wing for $2 million, one from Hennepin County for $1.4 million, and a large project in the southwest for Redwood County and other counties of $15 million. That kind of summarizes the projects in terms of the request. The results of those CAP projects, I think, is what I wanted to concentrate a little bit on. If we were to get all of the projects in place over the next 2 to 3 years, we'd probably have the development of at least 160 jobs for those projects, which would result in, once operating, 20 to 30 permanent jobs for the communities in which they'd be located. We also have another resource recovered from the waste, which would be at about 11 megawatts of energy available for the communities where the facilities are located, which would translate either through energy sales or through materials recovered for sale of about $5.7 million per year, or $136 million over the life of the project. The projects that we're looking at are the expansion of three existing projects, and in the case of the Redwood County project, one new project, which would be a waste energy facility. I'll go through each one of them individually in a moment, but that would build approximately 580 tons of capacity to manage waste on an annual basis. If we want to equate that back to the previous presentation on the closed landfill cleanup program, the capital assistance program has provided capacity to manage more waste than is in all those closed landfills in the program. And as we continue to add capacity, it avoids landfill needs as well as potential for cleanup down the road. We also have the ability with these projects, if they were in place, to manage waste within 28 different counties potentially. And that would result in significant reduction in land disposal needs as well as the recovery of over 3.5 million tons of waste over the life of the projects. All four projects have completed a preliminary application, as I mentioned, with our program. I'll try and avoid slipping into the acronym vernacular, but sometimes we do that. The Capital Assistance Program also has looked at all four of those projects for eligibility according to the statute and to our rules, and all four are eligible. And if the legislature appropriates the funds, then we will request final applications to do some additional work with each of the applicants to make sure that the feasibility is ready for all the projects, and then go and enter into grant agreements with each one of the projects and begin implementation. I'll go over the four projects quickly. The first project is in Olmsted County, and it's the expansion of an existing waste-to-energy facility. The total capital cost of this project is approximately $33 million for the entire project. They will reduce waste that's currently being landfilled and also catch up a little bit. As you all are probably aware, the area of Rochester has grown tremendously, and their needs for management capacity has also increased. It will also support the local county's goal of achieving a 90% recovery rate for the waste that they generate. It will also generate approximately 5 megawatts of energy available for the community and also protect sensitive groundwater resources in a karst area. They'll also be able to potentially expand their district heating and cooling system, which I'll show you a slide of in a moment. On a map level, Olmsted and Dodge counties participate in this project. The actual facility is located in Rochester. This is a picture of the facility in Rochester. And if you take a look at the next slide, you'll see a map of the district heating system. And you can see from the upper right-hand corner where the facility is located, all the way down to the downtown of Rochester, there's a steam line that extends, providing steam to local hospitals, the federal prison, local government center, as well as potential to be in the downtown area and potentially hit local businesses down there with their heating and cooling needs. So the 5 megawatts of energy that would be generated would be readily available for use. That's the project in Olmsted County. Moving up the river a little bit towards the city of Red Wing, there's a project, another waste energy facility, and this time they're proposing to add a waste sorting line linked to the existing waste energy facility. The total capital cost for that is approximately $4 million. They're going to be able to reduce their air emissions as well as recover materials from the waste stream. If you think about metal-bearing waste such as frying pans and other materials that normally couldn't be collected in a local recycling program, is the kind of metals that they're trying to pull out. Also, by doing this, they expand the useful life of the facility. The wear and tear because of those metals going into the furnace boxes would be greatly reduced. They'd realized there, I think, some real operational and economic advantages of a pre-sort system. We have those in place at a couple other facilities in the state. Again, this is a location of the project in Red Wing. Both Goodhue and parts of Wabasha County participate in that project. This is just a look at the facility as it exists now. This next slide is of a pre-sort facility up in Fauston, Minnesota, the Polk County facility. This shows the mechanical as well as the hand separation of the recyclables as well as the objectionable items. I think the real good slide down in the corner, the right-hand corner, shows those metal-bearing waste. You can see frying pans and you can see chairs and other things that normally you wouldn't put in your recycling bin at the curb, but they end up in the garbage at these facilities. And by pulling them out, they extend the life as well as recover the materials for use. The next project is back up in the metro area at Hennepin County. Their proposed project is to expand their household hazardous waste and transfer station building. The total cost is approximately $2.9 million for the project. What they're trying to do is expand the capacity for household hazardous waste and recycling materials drop-off. They need this improvement basically from a safety standpoint, but from a growth standpoint, for service, both the safety of the users that are currently using it and for expansion. This would improve service to over 50,000 users currently and probably a lot more. The reason I say a lot more is in the metro counties, the household hazardous waste programs have a reciprocal drop-off agreement. So if you're a resident in Washington County, you can utilize any one of the facilities in the adjoining counties to participate. So if I work in Hennepin County and I live in Ramsey and I'm too busy to get to the local facility, but during lunch or something I can drop off, I can utilize those. The reason that there's issues with the service is kind of a big truck, little truck issue. This is a current look at the entrance, and you can see that the drop-off of the MSW, the Mixed Municipal Solid Waste, from the haulers is utilizing the same access as the little trucks who are dropping off the household hazardous waste and other recyclable items. In addition to the increase in needed capacity, this would help in terms of that separation. And with that, I'll end with the final facility that is proposed. It's for a brand new waste energy facility and materials recovery facility in Redwood County. The facility itself would be used to recover probably not just energy but also the recyclable materials. We're looking at a $37 million cost for the entire project. The capacity is dependent a little bit on the arrangements that are organized in the Southwest. There's a potential between 9 and 17 counties to participate, and active work is going on that project currently. This could also expand the life of six current Minnesota solid waste facilities, landfills that are operating in the region as well. As I mentioned, it would recover recyclables and remove the toxic materials through the sorting. And it also has been acting as a catalyst for regional development in the area on a multi-county level. We're looking at about 6 megawatts of energy production for that facility, which could also feed manufacturing in that region. This is the location that's proposed in the city of Lamberton and Redwood County. The dark green counties are those currently active in participation, and the other in the light green are potential participants, and that's why I say it's somewhere between the 9 and 17 number. This is just a schematic of the proposed facility and its operation. With that, I will conclude the presentation and entertain questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Benke. Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Government requests for $4 million. You've got four projects there. How are you going to split that up? What's the plan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a good question. As I mentioned, this is the competitive grant process. The recommendation of $4 million is like all the recommendations in the governor's budget. There's a balance that goes on there. We would take a look at and entertain final applications from these projects and look at them for readiness and for statutory requirements that we need to look at in terms of preference for that. And at that point, we would rank those and work with the applicants to see if the requests could be adjusted so that we could fund more, or if they would need to potentially wait and come back in another cycle.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Benke, historically, what has been the procedure coming out of the bonding committees, or actually final passage, as far as earmarking? I believe the Senate may have done a little earmarking in this area. Historically, have these projects not been earmarked and it just went over to your agency? You've been able to run your priority list or mixed bag or what?
Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorman, it has been a mixed bag. I think the office would prefer that we are allowed to run the process. It is a competitive process. We, however, accept readily the direction that we get and honor that. So we do understand that sometimes it does come along with that. We would prefer to have the resources available to fund all the projects, but recognize that priorities as such. So it has been a mixed bag. In the past, we have had a little more resources to deal with, but recognize the importance of getting additional facilities in place to get the environmental as well as the economic benefits.
Thank you, Mr. Benke. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Benke, I'm curious about the project in the Redwood project, because how do you know that all of those participants will stay involved? I guess sometimes multi-regional county projects have a good track record and others don't. I mean, people will continue to generate the waste, but what if something happens and a county feels like can't participate but originally committed to it? Will that dramatically impact the operation of that, or could it jeopardize somehow the default on the bonds? how do we make sure they're locked in for a long, long time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, that's a very good question, and that is one that we are continuing to work with local units of government on in developing institutional arrangements that can kind of stand the test of time. Some of the projects have been entered into under joint powers agreements, which didn't probably carry the same kind of commitment that we might like to see. And so as part of the effort with these projects, we're using them as a regional catalyst opportunity to maybe take them beyond a joint powers agreement and maybe try and get to another institutional arrangement that provides that longer term stability. That is an element that we will review all the projects for, and that is the institutional arrangements that they have to make the project successful.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I
Representative
could,
Keller.
Mr. Behnke, on that project in particular at $15 million, at least that's the state share, looking for the state share, are there any other options available to a group of counties like that? I mean, is there any other tool available out there other than state bonding? I'm thinking if they're generating energy, is there a revenue bond potential? Is there something else that could be created? I mean, if you're going to keep doing this at a clip of $4 million, that project is going to be difficult to build under this structure. So I'm just trying to think about, are there ways to create situations where we can utilize some other tools that either haven't been tapped or maybe haven't been thought about in terms of, especially when there's a waste-to-energy component?
Mr. Behnke, if you could give a short answer, that'd be great. There's actually another committee going to be coming in here, and we have one more question. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure we have a good answer for it. I think we're continuing to look at those other opportunities. This has been the vehicle that we've provided from a state standpoint. There are local options for the other parts, and as you saw with most all of these projects, we are leveraging local resources, usually at more than 2-to-1. So we'll take that back with us and continue to look for other options.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Behnke, do you have any feel for what stage of development these projects are in?
Mr. Behnke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Demmer, the three projects that I mentioned from Olmsted County, from Red Wing, and from Brooklyn Park, or the Hennepin County project, those are pretty close to ready to go. There is some additional work that probably needs to be done in Olmsted County, but they're on track as they've laid out their plan over the past couple years. So the only one that I would say would require considerable work and some of the things that Representative Kelleher mentioned in the Southwest. In fact, if we look at those projects, Hennepin County is anxious to get moving because of the issues with the public safety and the needs there. And all the projects, I think, are in pretty good shape, ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Behnke. And that concludes our committee. We'll adjourn.